Hennessy v. V&J Foods. Ms. Goldstein.
May it please the Court, my name is Jennifer Goldstein, counsel for the EEOC. Your Honors, this is a case in which Tony Wilkins, the 35-year-old general manager of a Burger King restaurant, sexually harassed Samika Merriweather, a 16-year-old employee of the restaurant. Wilkins touched her, told her he wanted her body, asked her to go to a hotel with him to model lingerie, offered her hundreds of dollars if she would do that, and told her he wanted a young girl whose body was not all used up. Now, these were not one-time occurrences. Wilkins harassed her for months and months unchecked, even though Merriweather repeatedly told Wilkins to stop, to respect her in the workplace. She complained to shift supervisor Monique Carson, who did nothing. She complained to shift supervisor Dolores McBride about the hotel proposition, for example, and McBride's response was to say, yeah, Wilkins does that with the young girls. You either need to go with it or cuss him out, as she put it, and she did nothing else. Merriweather complained to the restaurant's assistant general manager, Staten, and he giggled when she complained, and later on, when she explicitly asked him for the number of the company's offices so she could explain, instead of saying to her, sure, let me get you the number and a name and a contact so you can report this, he took a circle the wagons kind of approach and told Merriweather, well, I don't know if I can give you a phone number. And when she insisted, he gave her a phone number that was incorrect and then wiped his hands of it and said, well, I don't know. Finally, Merriweather resolved to tell the company president during a special visit the president was making to the restaurant, but there was evidence that Wilkins found out and then changed Merriweather's schedule to the late shift so that she and the president wouldn't overlap. She couldn't work that shift. She got Staten's okay not to work. She went home and told her mother what had been happening. Her mother immediately went to the restaurant to complain about the harassment, and within a few days, Wilkins had fired Merriweather. Now, in its brief to this court, V&J concedes that Wilkins sexually harassed Merriweather, but it argues that it shouldn't be held liable for this unchecked harassment, and it shouldn't be held liable for retaliatory firing. We submit that V&J is wrong on both counts, especially at the summary judgment stage. On the harassment, I just want to make 2 points, the first about tangible employment actions and the second about the affirmative defense. There was evidence that Wilkins used his power as general manager to get back at Merriweather for resisting his advances. Merriweather kept saying no.
The EEOC files very, very few complaints. Well, what is special about this case that the commission decided to take it rather than letting her, you know, bring her own suit?
Well, actually, Your Honor, the EEOC has put forward a youth at work program. I think we're trying to focus on educating younger people about their rights under the anti-discrimination laws. And obviously, she was a 16-year-old. And I think also the problem of young employees at restaurants seems endemic. There have been articles talking about the number of cases of harassment in the restaurant setting. So I think for those, I can't specifically speak to what was motivating, what was going through the heads of the people who decided to bring the case, but those are issues at the forefront of our mind.
So the main argument of V&J is that they have this elaborate reporting mechanism, which she failed to activate.
Right. They argue that she didn't complain to the corporate offices.
The phone number, is it?
I'm sorry?
Is that the phone number?
That phone number was only on the cover of the orientation handbook that she was handed her first day at work.
That was that general number.
Right, a general number to the...
And if you call that, what do they say?
My understanding is if you call that general number, you just would get the main offices.
You're not getting some sexual harassment or HR officer, you're just getting secretary
no.
Picks up and says V&J Foods.
That right. That was there was no number in the orientation handbook and the portions discussing harassment or other workplace problems. There's no phone number listed. The only place that phone number is listed is on the cover of the orientation handbook. The only other phone number that I think V&J emphasizes in its brief is this employee hotline number. It's a little unclear because much about that number is unclear because there's not much in the record. In fact, the document, the pay statement, wasn't even submitted. But the on the pay statement, what it said was, do you have a comment about V&J, then call this number. It's not, do you have a sexual harassment complaint? It was simply, do you have a comment? It was unclear. There's no evidence about where that number goes, whether it's operational, whether it's just a machine, that, whether there's a person at the other end. And I think most significant that was the fact that nobody at the restaurant knew about it. Wilkins was asked about it. He didn't know. Staten didn't know. Of course, she asked Staten for a phone number, mm-hmm. and he couldn't even give her one. And she certainly did not know about that number.
Well, didn't Staten give her the bad number?
Yes, that's right.
She tried that number.
She did try it.
It was not the number.
Right. She tried it, and it wasn't the right number. And then she went back to him and said that was wrong.
Ms. Goldstein, I appreciate some of the policy concerns that you expressed as in response to Judge Posner. Here we have one of the classic chains, Burger King, that happens to be owned by V&J, and I don't know how many others they have, but mm-hmm. we have these company-owned mm-hmm. fast foods as well. I guess there's a mix, obviously, in ownership across the nation. What ideally would be the commission's focus is that on-site there be some notice, because if the harasser is the manager, and there may be only one significant manager, Is that the aim? How would we best frame an appropriate policy here?
Well, I think this has come up in a number of cases this court has addressed. I think Gentry, for example, talks about posting the mm-hmm. name or at least job title and phone number at the restaurant. There was nothing posted there. It would be ideal. I think in a number of cases, this court's looked favorably on the fact that employers have posted the policy itself as well. We pointed out some flaws in the policy that other courts have noted, promising to investigate. There was nothing about that, promising protection from retaliation, because I think that's another critical component. I think in this case, she wasn't deterred. Obviously, she wanted to complain. But that's a critical element.
So it's the quality of the on-site notice that we should focus on. I'm particularly concerned about company-owned as opposed to smaller corporate ownership. I mean, I don't know how that breaks out in this fast food setting.
You're concerned when Burger King owns the franchise?
Let's take a hypothetical. It's one of the fast food chains that is owned by the parent corporation. Mm-hmm. It's not franchised to somebody who has 12 McDonald's in Detroit or something, and the harasser or harassers are the manager and the assistant manager. So there is no supervisor for the 16-year-old mm-hmm. To comfortably go to. So the protection there needs to be an extremely explicit on-site notice handed to or always in existence. What is the standard one would, or the appropriate notice one would want, or policy?
Posting, certainly many workplaces post policies, so that would be key. It's difficult, obviously, at these fast food restaurants because people don't have offices with computers where you can do all that. Whether there should be a designated person, I'm not really sure. Obviously, it would be up to a case-by-case analysis.
Yeah, a designated person, in all likelihood, would not be even close to the venue.
Right.
Corporate headquarters is Memphis, right. And you're in Portland being harassed.
Right.
The commission isn't asking for, in Portland, there to be an off-site recipient of the complaint, I'm assuming.
Another problem with the policy in this case that would address some of your concerns was I think V&J acknowledges that lower-level supervisors had no obligation, in fact, it's to report Wilkins. And, in fact, they seem to...
What would you think would be an adequate policy? What should they do? This is following up Judge Fong's question.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, I think it might be reasonable, and again...
They're not going to station a human relations officer in every...
No, I don't think that would, be in this circumstance, be reasonable, but in requiring lower-level supervisors to contact... If the 16-year-old complains to a lower-level supervisor, perhaps requiring them to report it to
the
corporate
office...
Would
that be a mandatory notice? Let's say we have a situation here where it's dismissed as... That's just Harry or whatever. Mm. So do you overcome the next level supervisor who is either not in the same or in a power relationship worrying about his or her job. Is that a mandatory reporting if we get a complaint? I mean, how would you feel that that should be not filtered at all, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Again, obviously that it would vary based on the circumstances, and I think a particular concern is the fact that there were 16-year-olds working
here. So you would consider
here.
Age, the age factor, as impacting whether or not you
age and
pass
the,
on.
How easy it is to access the corporate office, things of that sort.
Well, the only other supervisory people in the individual store are the shift supervisor, right?
There was the assistant general manager, Staten, who really acted as Wilkins when Wilkins wasn't there. He had a fair bit of authority. He didn't have as much authority as Wilkins because he didn't have independent authority to hire and fire, but he acted as Wilkins did. And he was the one that she asked for the number, and she did complain to him as well.
So you're suggesting that he, say, should have been required by the company's rules to forward her complaint up the ladder? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, I would say certainly the fact that he wasn't required should preclude a finding on summary judgment that they met their affirmative defense. I think that's one.
I'm not asking about that. I'm asking what you think should be the minimum duty, to comply with.
I think if the assistant general manager gets a complaint that the general manager is harassing a 16-year-old, then yes, I think that would be reasonable.
And he was not required to?
According to V&J, it wasn't. There was some confusion, but I think in its brief they said...
So they're relying on the employee to make a phone call, is that what it amounts to?
It was very unclear because in their orientation handbook they keep talking about reporting harassment to a district manager, and as yet I have yet to see anyone identified as a district manager. Mm-hmm. I'll save the rest of my time.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Goldstein. Mr. Krakowski?
Good morning. Well, we have some issues we can agree upon, some issues we can't agree upon. They say we agree that there's sexual harassment here. What we'll concede for the purposes of appeal is that there's a finding by the judge that there's a genuine issue of material fact, and that we'll accept it for that reason. And we'll go on to...
You don't really think there was...
We still take the position that's an issue of fact. We're not conceding.
That's not my question. You don't think there was sexual harassment?
Correct. Now, dealing with the issues in terms of the fear of...
Do you think is the relevance of an employee's age to the company's duty to, set up a complaint machinery? Is that irrelevant or irrelevant, in your view?
Irrelevant.
Irrelevant?
I think it's irrelevant in terms of...
I think that's wrong. Are you familiar with our Doe versus Oberweis, which you carefully did not cite?
I'm familiar with it, and the facts and circumstances of the case are rather extreme. This is the case involving statutory
rape. We said, though, there is a difference between a child employee and an adult employee. And surely one of the differences is that the complaint machinery has to be different, right? Because these are less sophisticated, less, obviously, mature people. But you reject that.
I can take the position that age can be a relevant factor in the context.
You just said it was, and now you say it is.
In the context let me qualify that. In the context of the facts presented to the court or the issues claimed by the individual employee.
Question: whether
I
an
say
employer
yes.
has a legal duty in establishing a complaint mechanism to consider the maturity and so on of the employees.
I think that's true. Now, as it relates to the context of this case, let's look at in terms of what we know she knows. She knew the policy. She was given the policy. On the cover of the policy, it said what number it was. This corporate office is not...
It wouldn't do her any good to call corporate offices, surely. Surely you don't think that.
I think that's it's very possible.
What, you call up IBM or something, you say... Say, I'm being sexually harassed. You're talking to an operator.
In that context, I imagine IBM would be a difficult comparison. But when you have V&J Foods, which is in a very close proximity to this store, in terms of it is in Milwaukee.
It has nothing to do with a phone call.
Well, that's, you know, in terms of, there's two things working here. The employee knows or should have known or has constructive knowledge of the policy. Should have read the policy.
What's this constructive knowledge stuff?
What's in prior court's decisions in terms of dealing with the issue of when someone is given a handbook and someone says, I have responsibility for reading it, which is conceded here. She says, I had the responsibility for reading it, and I have a copy of it. As a matter of fact, she presented the handbook after her termination to the EEOC during the investigation. She had access to it the entire time. Secondly, this other telephone number we're talking about, in terms of the telephone number is located on every one of her paychecks. It goes more than what the EEOC has suggested. They conceded an admission at record 836 that it goes beyond. It says, do you have a comment about V&J? Call the confidential employee hotline at 1-800-384, etc. And it goes on in terms of it's on every check. If you're a reasonable person and you're saying, what's the number that I should call, assuming that the call is what's required, you either call the number in your handbook, which she has access to, which gives you the corporate name and number, which says in the policy, talk to the district manager.
So who, if you call this hotline number on the check, who answers?
The company.
What does that mean? The company. Company doesn't answer a phone. A person answers a phone.
Someone at the company would be probably a receptionist, and I have to assume that. A receptionist would receive the call and say, who do you want to talk to? I want to talk to Mr. Wilkins, district manager. I want to talk to Human Resources. The policy has two designations.
Does she know who Mr. Wilkins is or what the district manager is?
She knows his boss. His name was Pete.
Would the handbook tell a 16-year-old making the call of the phone number on the check what to report?
Sure.
If they just reported harassment, that would be enough. That person would be directed to the – didn't need to ask for a district manager or Mr. whatever.
Correct. That's why the rule is reasonable, because this is an employee-directed process. It's not something in terms of, you know, other people reporting as discussed in other cases in this court. When you look at it in terms of the employee is old enough, 16 years old, to read the document, to read a telephone number and call someone and say, I have a problem here. She knew the number. It was on the book. She knew the number. It was basic on her pay stubs. It's not only that. She knew enough after she was terminated to open a telephone book, imagine. She still has her handbook with the number on it. She opens the handbook and finds the personal number of the training director of V&J and says, and by the way, and she was immediately confronted and said, why are you calling me at home? She calls the person at home. Why is she calling somebody at the company? She knew enough to say that. She knew enough to do that. A 16-year-old certainly knows how to do that. As a matter of fact, I think it's more reasonable to have a rule that provides that you call the corporation, you ask for the person's district manager, or you ask for someone in Human Resources. The reason for that is it's not unusual to type out a handbook. It's not unusual for people who are district managers to no longer be district managers. You're constantly changing names. So you really want to designate a group you're going to as opposed to a specific person. I think that's more reasonable in these circumstances.
But that's not in the handbook. There's no identification by groups. I appreciate you can't have people by name, but there's no identification about different areas. You know, if you're worried about benefits, call the benefits section. If it's a harassment, call the harassment. I mean, that's not in the handbook. And when she asked this Staten about the corporate office number so she could complain about the harassment, she was not given a
That's
number.
That's true.
She was ultimately given the wrong number.
And then, but for a 16-year-old to say, I've got the wrong number, asking for a number, a reasonable person would have continued to make some effort to complain about the sexual harassment. That's the reasonable part of this process. And it's not the
age. Are you treating her like an adult?
Mm-hmm. I'm treating her like a 16-year-old, a person who knows and uses telephones regularly.
Look, what you said at the beginning, I think, was much more illuminating, which was when you said that age is irrelevant. That, I think, is what you believe, or what your company, or what your client believes.
In the context of this case,
why didn't the sexual harassment handbook, or the employee handbook with its discussion of sexual harassment, have a very clear statement of a route for submitting a complaint about harassment? Giving the corporate phone number is not adequate.
I don't have it in front of me. I can't read it to you, but I think it's cited in our brief in that section where we actually quote the handbook, and it does tell the employee what to do if they're being harassed.
And what does it say?
It says go talk to the, you know, your call the district manager. It talks about calling human resources.
The district manager. There's no phone number for the district manager. It's just the corporate office. So you're supposed to call the corporate office and ask for your district manager? Is that the process?
That's where district manager works. That's where human resources works. They work at the corporate offices. So you call the office and you ask for that designated individual and basically you have a conversation, just like you would have asking for buying a refrigerator at Sears Roebuck. In terms of you make a call, you say, who do I talk to? You always get a receptionist, and then obviously goes before that. That's common knowledge, whether you're 16. And I said it's irrelevant to context of this case. Here's a person.
But when we go back to, let's go back to this phone call. So Wilkins talks to the mother. The mother says, I'm going to take the matter to the EEOC. Meriwether gets fired the next day. And then Meriwether and others look up the private number of a vice president, and they call her to complain. She says she doesn't want to hear it. She asks how they got the phone number, and she hung up and told them she wasn't the person they needed to be talking to.
Correct.
And then she didn't say who they needed to be talking to either, did she?
No, she didn't. She's director of training. But here she looks in the white pages for a telephone number. She calls someone at their home. And they're complaining about, they want to talk to someone about problems they're having.
Right,
or have
and
had.
Wouldn't it be logical that somebody in that position, director of training, would then say to her, you need to go to human resources, this is our harassment person, call our corporate number, ask for this person.
But just as
I just don't see why you're in, well.
It's just as reasonable as the individual calling the corporate office and saying, I want to talk to the human resource manager. I think that's so simple, it's so easy to do, that looking in the telephone book for a person that you don't know what her position is, she happens to be director of training.
Well, yeah, she just knew because I guess her name was on some training material or maybe she was involved in the training. So that was somebody they knew, a name they knew in the company. And it says Meriwether and others.
But we don't know.
Up the number. So you're imputing this knowledge to her, the 16-year-old, that she knew to try to get this person. It says Meriwether and others.
That's right. My position is a 16-year-old should continue to call and certainly call the corporate office and ask for human resources and say, as far as we're concerned, come on in, we'll talk about the issue, we'll solve the problem. That is reasonable under the circumstances.
Even though you don't have in your manual human resources is who deals with this kind of issue.
In terms of human resource does deal with the
know,
issue.
I know, but it's not in your manual.
I'd have to read it over more specifically. I thought it said
it. You don't know what's in your manual?
Yeah.
You don't sound very well prepared if you don't know what's in your manual.
Well, in terms of...
That's what the case is about, right?
Is in part, you're right. But in terms of dealing with the issue, I think that...
You don't know what's in it. Why should she know what's in it?
Well, it's my recollection is it is in your honor. It is in the book, and it talks about if you've got a complaint regarding human resource, regarding sexual harassment, that you can make your call to this specific designated area. That's, to me, is eminently reasonable.
To that area, and that
human
number
resources.
Is not in there.
But
it's not in the manual.
Yes, it is. It's on the front of the book. It's on the front of the book.
No. This, you said there's a section in the manual that deals with human resources, and it says in that manual that if you have a sexual harassment problem, call human resources. I'm saying in that part of the manual say is there, that we haven't seen yet, it says the number's there.
That's correct. There's no number.
There's no number designated
for the human resource department, but I'm not sure there is a number in terms of you call the corporate office and you say, I want to talk to the human resources.
You're not sure
people.
There is a number for human resources?
No, there is in terms of a designated number, like the direct line.
Yeah.
That most telephone lines come into a corporation, basically, and then are transferred to someone else. But in terms
of, do you get a receptionist or do you get a menu?
I would assume you get a receptionist.
Why do you assume that? Do you get a receptionist or do you get a menu?
I don't know the answer to that.
Isn't that important? It'd be interesting what was on the menu. Usually when you call nowadays, you don't get a receptionist, you get a menu.
That may be a concern, but if I called the company and I got a menu, it'd say, if you want to talk to human resources, please punch 112.
Maybe it doesn't say human resource on your menu.
Well, the menu has to say something in terms of, obviously...
It'd be nice to know what, rather than discussing the case in a vacuum.
But either way, I think it's reasonable for a 16-year-old...
I don't know.
When the Supreme Court in the Ferrer case was...
Your company has done it really half-baked. Mm-hmm. So it's got the checks with one number. It's got another number on the cover of the employee handbook. In this harassment section, doesn't have a number. There are much easier ways to deal with this problem. And when you're dealing with a 16-year-old, it seems to me you'd want to have a very simple route for a complaint.
Wouldn't you think it would be helpful to have just an on-site number? If nowhere else next to you must wash your hands before you return to work. I mean, then we don't have to go through handbooks, and we don't have mm-hmm. to assess, is this an average 16-year-old versus or above average? You know, it just seems to me that we could. I appreciate you saying there are avenues that could have been traveled and either were or weren't, and this was an innovative 16-year-old in the sense that she went perhaps to the phone book. But shouldn't the policy be that it just on-site on these fast food restaurants, just like you call 911 for fire, wouldn't that be the appropriate corporate approach?
We start with Farragher when the Supreme Court's instructing us to say, look, have a policy that
isn't dealing with 16-year-olds.
That's true in that sense, but I'm saying that at least they're saying...
That's critical. I think it's critical. You think it's unimportant. I think it's critical.
The context of this case and what she had available to her, I think it's my position.
No, it's too confusing. That's the problem. It's confusing to a 16-year-old.
And then I want to follow up on what Judge Flom said. Okay, so we understand what your position is with respect to her. But doesn't it make more sense to have a poster posted at each restaurant?
I don't think it's required.
It says if you have... I'm not asking whether it's required. Doesn't it make sense? Isn't it more practical when you make sure you delivered it right to the people who need it if there was a poster there with a number and says, you know, if you're sexually harassed or if you have any... You can put other things. You don't have to suggest that they... You want a sexual harassment case, but if you have questions about benefits or there's a sexual harassment claim or whatever, here's the number to call.
Let me answer
this way.
Wouldn't
that make more sense? Wouldn't that
be
easy?
It could be. I think it could be reasonable. You know, every employer has filings, and they have to post all kinds of notices regarding wage and hour issues and all of the related OSHA-related issues.
Right.
If as the EEOC says, what's really paramount in this case or concern about their policy, then why haven't they issued a regulation that provides that in places of employment, retail or grocery stores or fast food places have a requirement to post notices regarding all the issues you're talking about? They haven't done that. That would be a standard for which I couldn't accept. Is it something that should be done, could be done? Maybe I think you're right.
Well,
it'd be
certainly
more clarified,
might save your client a lot of money, whether they mandated it or not, if you had a simple poster like that. And then you wouldn't have cases like this in terms of people having the notice of who to call. I mean, that would all be very clear. You could just point, if someone said, oh, I didn't know what to do, I mean, common sense, it seems to me your client should think seriously about putting up such posters, and then you avoid this kind of litigation.
So we were
just asking from a practical standpoint, doesn't that make sense, and isn't it reasonable?
It can be. It's not unreasonable. It certainly would be reasonable. But let's put it this way. What if we had a big sign that says sexual harassment? If you feel you've been sexually harassed, call these two numbers. One is the number on the handbook, and the other one is on the check that you've gotten every time you got a paycheck. And the employee still sits back and says, I didn't see the sign.
Well,
it's no different than
you're in a much stronger position.
I think you're right. I think it'd be a much stronger position. There's no question in my mind for 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, or whoever.
Was Wilkins married when he was hired?
Don't know.
So you have an explosive situation here, right? You're hiring young men who are going to be working without supervision in these stores, and they're going to be in charge of all these teenage girls. Company ought to recognize that that requires special care in that situation.
I agree. And I think the company, to the extent...
The company didn't take special care.
It didn't go as far as Judge Williams has asked.
Something that would cost the company more, either. It's not a question of imposing onerous requirements on a company. That's not the issue. No expense involved.
And I can only say, in terms of response to Judge Williams, that the company could do that, but should they, or are they required by law to do it? We're saying no.
There's a risk here, and they can deal with that risk very easily.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they can deal with the risk, but
to do it is foolish on their part, and could also be illegal.
It could be, but to mandate it by way of a regulation is one way. To mandate it through common law by court saying that a company and a retail organization...
Well, you've got to have the EEOC do it for you.
Well, let someone do it. I think it's reasonable for the employer to do that.
It's
not unreasonable to do it. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying...
You want a regulation.
We don't want more regulations, obviously.
You just said you wanted regulation. Now you say you don't want more regulation.
No, I'm saying it could be a regulation. It could be regulated. It could be. Or it could be regulated through the common law decisions with the court, where the court starts mandating, you know, additional requirements as to what an employer has to do.
Regulate you, then have us regulate you.
I'm sorry?
Never mind. Thanks, Mr. Krakowski. Ms. Goldstein, how much time does she have?
I don't have much to add. Just a couple factual points. The manual at page A156 of the appendix is where the policy is. It doesn't mention HR. It does say you have to complain to the district manager.
Complain to the district manager. And everybody at the restaurant, as I understand it, thought that Wilkins was the district manager.
Or they thought he was the one they had to go through. I'm not even sure they knew about it. They never used the word district manager, but that seems to be everyone's consensus thought. In terms of
the employee manual does not explain who the district manager is, what his function is in the company or anything.
No, and in fact, on the inside, the second page of the manual lists a spot where you can write in names for people like your restaurant manager. It doesn't even have a spot for district manager. In terms of this hotline.
So it just has spots for who? Why don't you tell us?
Sure, I'm sorry. It's page A148 says, Director, it says the name of your franchise owners, and that's filled in. And then it says director of operations, and it's blank, restaurant manager, and it's blank, and assistant managers. And that's all it says. As far as the hotline number going to the company, there's no evidence of that. This was a number buried on a corner of a pay statement. The pay statement was produced by a payroll data company, so there's no evidence where that number goes in the record. The third point about the phone book, again, no phone book was in the record. If she looked under Burger King, I don't know whether there was a separate entry for Burger King corporate offices. She might have had to look under B&J. I don't know whether she would have known to do that.
On her check, did her check say B&J? Was it a B&J issue check it a Burger King check?
To be honest, I don't have. There's no check in the record. But on the charge that she filed, she listed Burger King as the employer. On some of her commendations she got, it said Burger King. So she might reasonably have thought Burger King was where she needed to look.
Ms. Wilson, if I could just loop you back to something that I think I started with, and perhaps to follow on the exchange with Mr. Krakowski. Would the commission like to see this evolve case by case, do you have a model? Since if the policy is to protect these young, obviously women in this case, and perhaps most cases, should we be parsing this 16-year-old, this fractured notice, these three tortured venues, if you will, or channels? Why is the commission not offering up, which I tried to tease out here, what we ought to do? Because, frankly, the model of the problem exists in thousands, mega thousands, right?
Sure.
I mean, this isn't a unique grocery store setting, small grocery store.
Right.
You're speaking, and that's, I'm assuming, why the case was advanced, because you see the sweep of a much greater problem.
Right.
So, for me, trying to look not only at this case but down the road, I kind of would like to see the commission frame up or offer up some guidance on what ought to be minimums in the notice.
The Supreme Court started out by saying suitable to the employment circumstances.
Exactly.
And obviously, a Burger King is different than an oil rig, which is different than a law firm.
But the setting of if not scores, several young people with a solitary management figure with maybe one or two shift managers as we have, mm-hmm. that's a pretty common phenomena. Mm-hmm. I understand it's not the oil rig thing, but it is a setting that's replicated everywhere. So when you say make it suitable, the Supreme Court is directed to the employment situation. We've got a huge employment situation that you're I think, trying to address by advancing this case.
Yeah, and I think that might be helpful, frankly. I mean, in this case, because of the posture, of course, we'd lost below, and it was summary judgment and affirmative defense. But I think you're right that there are certain things that if an employer doesn't do, I think it should have a good reason.
It would be fair to me, to these employers, to not have to divine the best last case decision on it. We can evolve that way, but perhaps...
Although I think some of these things are sort of are obvious, but they're not...
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Goldstein, and thank you to Mr. Kowski.